Town. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, with the ultimate fan experience. Today's guest kind of has no need for an introduction. He's been around and he's gone away and he's come back and now he's back in H-Town, hopefully to stay this time. We'll see what happens. But ladies and gentlemen, welcome my good friend, Paul Gallant.
Dude, what's going on?
What's up, man?
Been too long.
It has been a while. You know, and I'm glad to see that you're back in Houston.
Me too.
You know, following the Astros like you should be and talking about the Texans like we're actually something better than the Seattle Seahawks, right?
And they are better than Absolutely. The Seattle Seahawks now. I mean, I'm so excited for this year on a level that in all my time covering this team, I don't think I've been. With what we saw from Stroud last year, right. D'Amico Ryan's year one, it's really exciting.
From depression to aggression, right?
Indeed.
So you went away for a while, mm-hmm. and you know,
two long years,
right?
Yeah.
During the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
Ground Zero.
Yeah.
and from Houston to Seattle. How was it there?
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about it from a football fan perspective, that is a diehard sports town. And I will give Seahawks fans a lot of credit. Yeah, I mean, sometimes they're a little insufferable with it, but we always had some good back and forths up there. And it's interesting to see, really, you know, to come back here, the complete difference. Now, Pete Carroll was the oldest coach in the NFL when I was up there. I had the pleasure of getting to interview him once a week. He was so good to me, even though he didn't always, you know, tell me the right thing. I remember one time, hey, what's going on with Brian Schottenheimer? Is he going to be back next year? Yeah, he'll be back. And he fired him a couple hours later.
Right.
But Pete Carroll to D'Amico Ryans, you know, it's interesting. The way that Pete Carroll coached and the way that D'Amico coaches, obviously D'Amico's an ex-player, but you can tell that these are guys that trust the players on their team to just go do their jobs.
Right.
They don't need to be hard asses. They don't need to yell at them, scream at them, or anything like that. And obviously, two totally different generations of coaching and two different backgrounds. But I would say up my time up there, it was interesting to see the guy who was really the first one in the NFL to kind of change the way that coaches operate, where they're a lot more respectful of players, deferential, and saying, hey, like, we know you're going to do your job. Right. I don't need to yell at you all the time. And seeing it here, obviously, with a totally different guy, it's pretty cool to see.
Right. So what do you got going on now? Like, now you're back. I know you have your own podcast right now, and you're running it. And
so ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, I'm doing the show there from noon to 3 with Joe George. I've been at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 for about, almost 2.5 years now.
Okay.
And we've got a podcast, and we do the show on YouTube, and it's on Twitch and everything like that. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, cool. Now that you're back in Houston, Let's talk a little Houston, Texas.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about what we had versus what we have. You know, with Culley and Lovey, we couldn't sustain losing like that on and on and on and on. And do you feel like when the Texans hired those guys, like that was a quick fix, or do you feel like it was something they thought was actually gonna help the team in the long run?
You know, it's a good question. It's hard to imagine that either David Culley or Lovey Smith were going to be long-term answers just because of their age, not to be ageist or anything like that. When they hired David Culley, to me, it felt like this was a job that not a lot of people wanted. And you kind of understand why with what was going on with Deshaun Watson and with the lack of success on the field, maybe some rumors about what was going on behind the scenes in the front office. So they move on from him after 1 year. I know some people got mad about that. Look, the guy still got his money. It's not like the Texans were, you know, not trying to pay him.
Exactly.
The next year with Lovie Smith, they did a little bit better, but I think that they thought they were going to get more out of Lovie Smith than they actually did. And obviously,
all the fans kind of thought the same. Well, even the fans thought the same thing, that we were going to get more than the two wins we got.
So. And I think a lot of people were maybe a little bit too high on, one, Davis Mills, two, Pep Hamilton. But the thing with Lovie, I feel like that really hurt them was, well, they just didn't really seem to have a lot of energy.
Right.
And I thought it was interesting when D'Amico Ryans came in mentioning that there's not going to be any energy vampires here. I don't think he was taking a shot at Lovie Smith by any means, but you need to have somebody who's young to, I think, really excite the young players and make them think that there is a future here. Not to say that there wasn't any with Lovie, but you know, with the way that everything went down, where there were rumors about Josh McCown being hired, and then all of a sudden Lovie Smith gets hired at the absolute last second, it felt like that was also another hiring process where maybe their hand was a little bit tied behind their back.
Right.
So this time around, I mean, you got the guy who played for your team, who was really good for your team, who was a second-round pick, to bring him back in. I felt very good about the hire. I did not think we would get what we got, though, year one right away.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, in D'Amico, when he came on the scene, it was funny, you know, as a fan, you get that call, and you're like, hey, man, did you see who we got?
And yeah.
I was so ecstatic just to see the fact that it wasn't just a throw-in. Like,
no.
You know, Cully and them, where it was like, listen, we're fixing to change the way Houston thinks. And they did that. And then year one, he comes in and him just doing the things he did in the draft, you know, and I know it wasn't just him, but what did you think after, you know, D'Amico coming in there and then we go draft, we go 2-3.
I mean, that was surprising. I remember we were doing a draft show at a Mexican restaurant and we had heard that there were some rumors that they would potentially be trading up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for it to happen bang, bang like that, I mean, we were obviously there at the draft party back in 2017 when they traded up to go get Deshaun Watson. And, I mean,
actually, my first interview with you.
That was,
you
know, the first time we talked to each other.
Yeah, we talked to each other, and you were like, ultimate, who you taking, man?
Yeah.
And I was like, Mahomes. Let's go Mahomes.
Hey, I mean, that was the right call.
I think it would have been, you know? I mean, where would the Houston Texans been if we would have had him, you
What a rabbit hole to go down. But when they made that move to trade up to 3 and get Will Anderson, it really did feel like there was a lot of collaboration between Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans.
Right.
I mean, if we know anything about the history of the Houston Texans in a post-Gary Kubiak, Rick Smith world, it's that the Bill O'Brien era was one where it never seemed like he was in alignment with the people that were making the actual roster decisions, including eventually himself. So then all of a sudden you get to a point now where it's clear that Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, at least for now, have a mutual respect. You hope that
they're
working
great together.
Right. For the Texans to go get the quarterback who ends up being the best quarterback in this year's past draft class. But also a guy in Will Anderson who, I mean, he's an Alabama player. I bet D'Amico Ryans loved him. And he was probably nudging Nick Caserio.
Oh, absolutely.
Can we get this
guy?
We
got the, you know, and to foresee offensive rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year. You know, last podcast we were talking about how D'Amico should have got coach of the year. Should have been the trifecta.
I mean, honestly, with the way that they played the Cleveland Browns and kicked their butt?
I mean, you know, we let you come in and beat us around a little bit, you know, in a regular season game. But then to come back in the playoffs and go, nah, that's not happening today.
It's a little bit like when David Robinson won the MVP over Hakeem Olajuwon, and then Hakeem Olajuwon proceeded to kick his ass in the playoffs.
Right, and then, I mean, you had Flacco come in, and everybody was talking about how great he's going to come in, and he's just going to tear up the, you know, the rookie quarterback, and I don't think that happened.
No, it's
not. It didn't happen.
I don't remember that happening either. Remember that was the most energy that I've felt at NRG Stadium in a very long time, and I know you've been to a million games.
Yeah. And I think just in that season, I think the other moment of the energy was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game.
Oh, gosh, that one.
I mean, to see...
Be honest with me. When they got the ball back with less than a minute, how were you feeling? Did you think that they had a chance? Because I was thinking to myself, I feel good here. I don't know if I should feel good. Because there was barely any time left.
The energy was there. I was thinking, you know, it's a good thing that Tom Brady wasn't playing. You know, like, it was one of those, like, man, you know, you're God. You know,
it's Baker Mayfield, not
Baker
Tom Brady.
Mayfield. Exactly. And to tell you the truth, when they put that face of him just sobbing on the sideline, I mean, his face was plastered everywhere of just like, how did this happen? And I'm just like, there's only one man to CJ. CJ did his thing. He went down there, you know, 47. Him and Tank, they connected.
Oh, those
out of bounds. I mean, just who makes those throws?
The touchdown throw was something else, but the throw that he had down the left sideline, I forget that was the second
and the
third play.
I mean, just.
Oh, my God. I have no idea. It was so boom, boom, boom.
I mean, it was
quickly.
Like perfect accuracy for CJ and for Tank to just grab it and just get out of bounds and, you know, stop the clock. I mean, those are moments you just – I enjoyed every minute of
you
it.
You should have. So.
Absolutely.
My God, I had to stay in the press box. Like, I couldn't – I wanted to shout and be like, oh, yeah, well, let's freaking go. And,
exactly.
Yeah, I had to be quiet and be like, yeah, interesting.
So we talked a little bit about the past.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about the future.
Okay.
What does the future hold in your eyes for the Houston Texans?
Well, I feel really good about the entirety of the C.J. Stroud era and the D'Amico Ryans era.
Yes.
This year is going to be really interesting because they have the fourth toughest schedule in the NFL. Only AFC North teams have a tougher schedule than them. And this past season, we saw this team go up against a lot of teams that don't have great quarterbacks. And honestly, they struggled against some of them.
Right.
So it's going to be really, I think, intriguing to see how they match up against some of the league's best. I mean, another round with Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, among many others. It's going to be a really tough test for them this year.
The trifecta of great quarterbacks right there.
Exactly. You know? And I would love to see them have an unbelievable historic season. But I think that this is going to be one of those years where it's tough. It doesn't really matter what you do in the regular season as much these days, as long as you just get into the dance.
Yeah.
And I think over the course of the year, the real thing I'm looking for is from week one to week 18, how much do they improve? Because we saw them last year clearly improve from the start to the end of the year.
Of course.
That's what it's always about. And so there might be some games that they lose and you think to yourself before the playoffs, oh, dang, are they really going to do it this year?
Right.
I think it's all going to be about patience, but I'm excited for it, that's for sure.
I mean, first and foremost, I would have to say what I'm looking forward to is just the division. You know, the Colts. You got Richardson coming back,
yeah.
You know, and I think that's going to be one of the toughest tests of the Colts.
I mean, last year, yeah. I don't know why the Colts took Jonathan Taylor off the field on that 4th-and-1 and brought in that third string running back, poor guy,
yeah.
Who drops that pass on 4th-and-1. But I mean,
leave it to Mitchie to like, just,
yeah.
I mean,
he stunk that game. And, and the thing is, I mean, even with him not playing very well, they still almost beat you, and you beat you early on in the season, too. Like that, Shane Steichen's a very good coach, right. and Indianapolis is a very good team.
And I think those are. That's who I'm worried more about. Not so much Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
I think he's got his money. Now he's got a baby coming. You know what happens when these guys get kids or get married or
I mean,
something
I
like
hope
that.
So, it seems selfishly.
Like, you know, I mean, Trevor, I'm not looking for you to do too much, but.
They're going to be hungry, though, this year. I mean, look, the way that they ended this past season, it was a massive disappointment. They were 8-3 after Matt Amendola missed that field goal where it bounces off the crossbar. And I don't know if you've seen the comments recently from Jaguars ownership, but clearly there's a lot of pressure being put on them. Shad Khan was weighing in on things from, hey, like, we put a lot of money into this offseason where they signed some guys, but also saying,
well, that big money they put on Trevor, too. I mean,
Trevor, as well. You're
dude,
right.
Either put up or shut up, kind of.
Yeah,
with
exactly.
Him,
you know? And, you know, for Lawrence, I think Lawrence is good. I think.
Right.
A lot of Texans fans maybe get, because of C.J. Stroud, you think, okay, he's better than Trevor Lawrence. And I would agree with that. But Lawrence is definitely a good player. And they have good coach in Doug Peterson, who won a Super Bowl. I think for Jacksonville, you can't overlook them. They were 8-3 last year. They had the AFC South dead to rights. And I think that they're going to be pissed off and hungry to open up the year. Why not? I mean, they blew it down the stretch. And if they were maybe coached by some of the past Jaguars coaches, I would think to myself, oh, okay, they're not going to be the same team they were last year. Peterson, he's at the very least a good coach, so we'll see what happens.
And so Tennessee Titans, where are you putting them this year?
Man, I don't know why they fired Mike Vrabel. I really can't get past that, and I don't want to dump too much on Brian Callahan, their new head coach, but it's as boring a hire as Mike Munchak, as Mike Mularkey, some of the other guys that they've brought in before. Will Levis, we'll see what he does this season. He's got to be a little bit smarter.
I mean, he did him right, you know. I mean,
he is.
I think he'll come around to do a better job than.
He had a couple of good moments. He had a couple of good moments. I think the real question about him is he going to stay healthy? Because we saw in the game against the Texans, I mean, he's throwing his body around like an absolute maniac out there. You got to be a little bit smarter than that. And on top of that, I wonder about the supporting cast around him. They got a lot of wide receivers in name. You know, they brought Calvin Ridley from Jacksonville, and they have DeAndre Hopkins still too, but. Man,
D-Hop,
moving on.
I miss that guy.
I do too. Imagine. But I mean, look at their receiver core right now. They're fine. They got
Stephon. I mean, Stephon Diggs. I mean, who would? When you heard that come across,
I was stunned because I
think we all were a little stunned that was coming. You know, Mixon, I was like, cool. We got us a running back to help Pierce. You know, I think our running back game improved when we got Mixon, but. I think the Saquon Barkley thing I got a little too excited about, you know, because I thought maybe it was going to happen kind of thing.
The thing with running backs, you got to be careful about paying guys. And Saquon Barkley, he's a guy that's been injured a whole lot. So I look at the Barkley move and deciding to pass on him and at least at a certain point walk away from the table, which is what the Texans supposedly did. That's what Saquon Barkley said. I think it was the right move.
Right.
I like Damian Pierce a lot. I know he got a lot of criticism for last year, but if you watched him in year one where he's playing on a team where the quarterback, you can't even really respect him.
Right.
He's got a lot of talent.
Here's the thing, too. I don't know. I'm trying to remember where I heard this, but he said he needed a year to get acclimated to D'Amico's offense and running it and stuff like that. I know it's something – knew that a running back has to learn a whole brand new offense when it first comes on. But I think this year, I see him having a stellar year this year. I don't know why. I just feel like
I'm optimistic. It's very hard to go from, if you watch Dameon Pierce, Pierce is for his size, a very powerful runner, and he's one of those guys who just wants to go straight into wherever he can. And Bobby Sloak's offense is asking for guys to be patient and wait a little bit.
Right.
It is hard to change the conditioning, the wiring of a running back.
Right.
And that's the unfortunate part for Pierce. Pierce would fit in a lot of offenses. If you watched him in that season, he's breaking tackles. He's running through people.
Yes.
He has a break tackle ability that in Madden would be very, very high, like towards like 95 or something like that.
Exactly.
He just needs to be a little bit more patient. So,
and I think that's where Mixon will come into effect too, like, you know, the screens out to the side and stuff
receiver,
like that,
where
a good receiver. And Pierce just, you know what, we need 2 yards, Pierce. Get up in there, you know, do your thing kind of thing. I think that's where they'll put him in. So let's talk fantasy for a second.
Okay.
So, I mean, we got three stellar wide receivers right now. When you've got Nico, you got Stephon, you got Tank. I mean, who do you take in fantasy? Like, first, do you take Stephon, or is Nico a kind of guy that you're like, you know what, I feel like he's going to get more catches kind of thing because he's been with CJ longer?
I hope no one gets offended by this, because when you have this many receivers and you're looking at it from a fantasy football perspective, one of these guys is not going to get as many numbers as you want. So if I'm in a fantasy draft, I'm probably waiting to take the last Houston Texan wide receiver on the board, because that person is probably going, whoever ends up being, maybe it's Diggs, maybe it's Tankdell, maybe it's Nico Collins. It's three really good wide receivers, and I would imagine that the Texans want to run the football a little bit more this year too. One of these guys is not going to have the number one, number two wide receiver numbers that we're looking for. Which one? I truly could not tell you. I would assume Stephon Diggs between the three because of the lack of familiarity with Stroud to this point, and because he's a little bit up there in age.
I feel like they're going to double team him, and it's going to leave Nico and Tank completely open. And
you can't double anyone, really.
I know
that.
I guess that's what a few of my friends have talked about. You're like, if you double team him, you leave this one open. And it's like,
it's awesome.
Great. Yeah, to have that on a team to we have so many options, you know?
Every single week, somebody should be getting open.
Right.
And I hope they keep feeding that person the ball every single week. And, you know, fantasy football, we always want our guys to get the numbers and stuff like that.
It's a good thing I don't play fantasy, because, I mean,
it's good to stay away from.
Yeah. I did have another question I wanted to ask you before we get into this trivia thing, though. But uniforms, man. What'd you think, man? Did you fall in love? And if you did, which one did you fall in love with?
I love the battle red ones, because the horns on the helmet. It's about time someone does that.
I'm just kidding.
One more time. What was that?
I said this guy's idea.
Oh, that was you?
So, yeah. So, for the first podcast, we were talking about that with Doug, and they did a council where they, you know, we'd come in and we talked about it or whatever, and they were like, what would you like to see on the uniforms, if anything? And I told them, I'm like, you know, I like this little stripe right here, but I was like, what if it was a horn?
Yeah, what if it was horny?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to look to where the guys are standing in line, hands down, and you just look like a bunch of bulls, you know, bull rushing.
Yeah,
right?
That's the mascot.
And it's funny, because the people that were there, they're like, yeah, that sounds good. I was like, I don't care if it's a longhorn, whatever it is, just make it look like that. And sure enough, when the uniforms came out and I saw the horn on there, that's what I fell in love with. I thought that was just one of the coolest things.
And the candy-colored paint, too. Oh, I mean, an homage to
chrome face mask.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah. That part's cool. I'm disappointed, and I know this is not a Texans thing as much as it's a Amy Adams Strunk thing.
Yeah.
I wish that they were able to get a little bit more of that H-Town blue into the H-Town blue jerseys, but I do like the H on the side of the helmets. I think they did a very good job. They needed I wanted something new. I mean, it's been 20 years. We'd seen the same uniforms for the entirety of it.
Yeah.
This is a lot better.
Yeah. I think the city has taken on to it. I mean, Doug was talking about, like, right now in the market of sales, you know, the Houston Texans are number one in the marketing right now, as far as, you know, jersey sales, hat sales, things like that. So I think it's been very energetic with the whole way everything looks. They can't even keep it in stock right now.
It's awesome. And I mean, if you want to be a little superstitious, so when I was growing up in Massachusetts, the Patriots changed their uniforms in the 2000 season. Next year was 2001, and then they won 6 Super Bowls. with the same uniforms over that stretch.
With the same quarterback.
I mean, that's true, too. It's more the quarterback than the
Tom
uniforms.
It's Tom Brady. I mean, we're talking about the GOAT. I mean, you can say what you want. I'll go for a dynasty. I really promise you. I'll go for a dynasty. A trifecta would be beautiful. You know, like, why not, right? I've got a few trivia questions for you. I mean, and a guy who is all about stats and all about Texans.
I don't know about
that. You know, we'll see how good you are.
Now I'm nervous.
Yeah, right? So first and foremost, because I didn't even get this one right, but let's see if you do. Who scored the Texans' first ever touchdown?
Oh, crap. I knew this. I'm not even kidding. I looked this up a little bit ago.
Surprisingly, it's not Andre.
I know it's not Andre. It's a tight end. I know I'm going to get it wrong. So I'm gonna say because I love him, Seth Payne, but I know it wasn't Seth.
It was not.
Who was it?
It was Billy Miller.
Damn it! I knew that. I looked this up 3 weeks ago.
Right.
I looked this
You're
up.
Like eventually, I'm gonna get asked this question, and eventually, it's gonna happen. And it happened, and you still couldn't get it. And I'm a little disappointed in you,
I'm
man.
Sorry,
no,
man.
It's okay. Wow. What year was the first Pro Bowl for the Texans wide receiver Andre Johnson? These questions are a little bit harder than the ones last week. I mean,
what do you have gotten in his rookie season? I'm going to guess that he, for some reason, didn't get in his rookie season. I know 03, you probably had two Colts wide receivers in with Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne.
That is correct.
So I'm going to guess 04.
Correct. 2004 is the answer. Let's do a little J.J. Watt trivia.
Ooh, okay.
J.J. Watt broke which player's Texans record for sacks in a season?
Oh.
Absolutely. I actually knew this one because when we got him, I was actually excited about this guy. So,
okay.
I'll give you a hint. He was a first round pick.
Mario Williams.
There you go.
Okay.
I guess I shouldn't have given him that.
That was too easy.
That was too easy.
Thank you for the tip.
I was like, yeah, you're right.
Making me look smart.
It's me, Mario. You know, so here's a good one, too. And this will actually roll into Seattle Seahawks a little bit. What position did Dwayne Brown originally play in college?
Oh, that's a good one.
And where did he play?
Right tackle, Virginia Tech.
You got the Virginia Tech part, but not the right tackle.
He was
actually a tight end.
He was a tight end.
He actually was a tight end.
Oh, no way.
I know, right?
Didn't know that.
Let's see. Besides the Texans, and we'll give you credit for see how many of these you can actually get. What other team names were up for consideration before the Texans chose the Texans?
Oh, I know two of them. I think one was Apollos, one was Stallions, and I do not know the other ones.
The Bobcats.
That's
and the Wildcatters.
Okay.
Those
Wildcatters.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting. You know what? I'm glad they didn't go with those two.
Yeah, right?
I would have been cool with the Stallions. I remember I got this Sports Illustrated for Kids magazine back then, and I was looking at it, and they were going over all the possible names, and that's what I remember it from. I thought Stallions at the time was cool, but in retrospect, I mean, unless you're a Bill and Ted fan, I feel like that shouldn't have been the way to go. The Apollos would have been cool, but the way that they went, I like it.
Yeah, I think, to tell you the truth, I really would have liked to have seen the white helmet. When it first came out, I was like, man, I really like that helmet. This the red, white,
too.
And the blue and the white helmet.
I thought
that was cool. But let's talk experience. Being a reporter, you've had some interactions with not just the Texans, but the Seattle Seahawks and things like that. But interesting interactions between, say, Texans players, coaches, and staff that maybe you have a little insight on that you're like, you know what, man, I never thought that this was going to get said to me, or it kind of like one of those moments you're like, wow.
Well, I had an interesting relationship with Bill O'Brien based off of our back and forths at press conferences.
Bill.
Yeah, and I mean, There was a time where I thought Bill and I got along great, and then there was a show that after they lost to the Patriots to open the 2018 season where I said some things I probably shouldn't have, and I think that our relationship was never quite the same after that. But you can go back in time and look for press conference interactions between me and Bill O'Brien. They would get a little chippy. And I think for us, since we're both from Massachusetts, we're used to being, how do I say this, massholes to each other. So we're poking each other a little bit and stuff. But those were always fun. I enjoyed it. The worst moment I remember was when in the midst of the Brock Osweiler year, and Brock was a nice guy. I asked Brock a question if there was a theme to his interceptions over the course of the year, and he said, I don't think there is. He said every single interception has a story. And when he said that, I was just like, what are you talking about, right, dude? Like, what are you talking about? Why are you telling it to me like that? So those are probably, like, as far as my interactions with players and coaches, the ones I'll remember the most.
I mean, how many consecutive did he throw? I mean, it was in every game almost that season, wasn't it? Like a pick every game.
There were a lot of interceptions. Yeah, there were a lot. I mean, there's been some rough times. I remember the pick six streak that Matt Schaub had a couple years before that. But I will say, and you know, it is a bit of recency bias, but as far as fan experiences, the Browns playoff game is by far the most electric that I experienced in person. I didn't get to go to the first playoff game in 2011. I was doing stuff behind Michigan Control.
That was a...
I'm jealous, man. I was watching on a TV.
Stadium.
The TV screen was this big that I was watching it on, and the back of the TV went farther back than the actual screen itself. And I'm watching in there.
It wasn't a flat screen is what you're trying to say, right?
No, it was old. And I'm watching it, doing the highlights for the game. So I heard Mark Vandermeer's call of J.J. Watt's interception before I actually saw it. But then you see it, and I mean, I can't even imagine what it was like in the stadium.
The crowd eruption alone was ear piercing.
And when it gets loud there, it gets really loud. And
absolutely.
I felt like for the first time in a really long time, for the Browns game in the playoffs, it was that way. And I can kind of understand why last year a lot of the traveling crowds traveled a little bit better. I think some people, you get the season tickets and you're thinking to yourself, you know, I can make a big buck here. Right. I'm going to sell my tickets and stuff. But once the playoff game happened, I mean, that I thought there would be more Browns fans there. It was all Texans fans there. And it was so loud for the Steven Nelson interception.
Oh.
The Christian Harris interception to follow that up. I thought the whole place was going to explode.
Yeah, I thought the roof was actually going to. I didn't think we were going to have to open up the roof. I think it was about to blow off.
They should open up the roof sometimes.
Yeah, it's going to happen. I feel like they've got it in the works. You know, and I didn't realize how much was actually involved in the opening and the closing.
I can imagine.
Of the roof.
It's
It's not easy. And to hear them talk in the fan council this year, like, hey, you know, we want to do this. We want to open it up, but it has to be right. You know, I mean, I'm not going to lie. A guy who, you know, paints my face in this, you're in the sun pretty much half of the game.
You'd be sweating.
Yeah, I mean, when I take my paint off, it still looks like it's on. You know, I mean, it takes me a couple of days to get my, you know, to get my color back. But I think one of the last questions I had for you is, like, so out of all the years of doing sports, who was your best interview? Who did you like? Be like, man, I am so glad I got to interview this guy.
Man, that's a tough one.
Right. It's a 30-minute show, man. You're miserably gonna have to answer.
Yeah, I know, that's true. You know, again, it's recency bias here.
Right.
I've covered so many Texas teams; they all blend together.
Right.
I really enjoyed interacting with Christian Harris this past year.
Okay.
And I think with the year that he just had, and going into next season, he had a couple of just really funny one-liners that I don't know if I can repeat on the air, but in response to finding out how many tackles Blake Cashman had in the game, it made me laugh very hard. I get a kick.
I'm
going to
miss
him.
That guy. Really, I Blake Cashman was
good for him getting paid.
Absolutely,
though.
He got paid. He's in Minnesota. You know, I'll be going up to that game to make sure I see him play this year.
Jonathan Grenard too.
Yeah, we lost some good players, but I feel like we've replaced them with even better. I mean, you got guys like Hunter. I mean,
Danielle Hunter.
Wow,
yeah.
This
16 and a half sacks.
I mean, the duo alone with him and Will Anderson
Autry,
it's going to be something to see.
Two players, 28 sacks last year, Danico Autry and in Danielle Hunter. It's crazy.
It's going to be awesome, man. Paul, thanks a lot for coming on. Thanks
anytime,
for giving
Steve.
A little insight, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's always good catching up with you, man.
It's
great
to catch up.
So, ladies and gentlemen, third episode, Ultimate Fan Experience. It's in the books, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next week.